us in him, but it is because of our need. In Job chapter 36, verses 15 through 21, Elihu says, but those who suffer, he delivers in their suffering. You know, we want to be delivered from our suffering, as Job did, but he says he delivers them in their suffering. He speaks to them in their affliction. He is wooing you from the jaws of distress to a spacious place, free from restriction, to the comfort of your table laden with choice food. We live in a world where if things are going to be done fairly, that people are going to have to be confined and restricted. And Job is saying he's going to lead you to a place where there is utter freedom, but it is also a society that works based on freedom, that freedom doesn't become something that has to be confined. And he says, but now you are laden with the judgment due the wicked. Judgment and justice have taken hold of you. Be careful that no one entices you by riches. Do not let a large bribe turn you aside. Would your wealth or even all your mighty efforts sustain you? So that you would not be in distress? Do not long for the night to drag people away from their homes. Beware of turning to evil, which you seem to prefer to affliction. So Elihu is calling Job out, and he's saying, hey, to some degree, Satan was right about you. You were doing what was right, but it was so that life would go well for you. And he's saying you didn't really have a desire for righteousness. You've been blaming God for being corrupt and unfair, but aren't you the one that's honestly for sale? He's saying, look, if all that you had received would have been given you for doing evil, it seems that you would have done it. And what does that say about the rest of us? And so he's saying that, this suffering is to refine us. It is to cleanse us from these impure motives, these divided loyalties, this preference for our own prosperity or comfort and our distraction by it, and to teach us that there is something more and something greater. But to say this to somebody, it's hard for them to receive it because they're suffering. And unless you've suffered yourself, it's very difficult to be heard with this kind of advice, to say to somebody, God is getting you over yourself. He's helping you get past your divided loyalties. He's helping to purify you and to lead you to a place of real righteousness. It's hard to say that to somebody who's suffering if you've never suffered. And so Elihu is saying it to Job, but in Hebrews chapter 5, verses 7 through 9, we read that during the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverent submission. Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. It's hard to think about God learning a thing, but only when somebody is tested, only when obedience runs in the opposite direction of our own desires and our own comfort, do we learn it. If we're always told to do exactly what we want to do, and I think from eternity past that was true of Jesus, but here he is a human being, somebody who is by very definition alienated from God the Father on earth, and at least not in his immediate presence as he had been for eternity past. And now he's commanded to do a thing that everything in him recoils from in horror. And he has to surrender to that. He's learning obedience, but that's what Job needed as well. And Jesus learned obedience from what he suffered. And once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. And so God entered his creation to reconcile it to himself. But all of that would make no difference at all if we were obliterated at death. And so the rest of the story is that he did this to preserve his creation forever. And so in Job chapter 14, verses 14 through 15, we see that Job's suffering had already begun to teach him some things as he compared it to what he already knew about God. In Job 14 through 15, it says, "If someone dies, will they live again? All the days of my hard service, I will wait for my renewal to come. You will call, and I will answer you. You will long for the creature your hands have made." If we believe that God created us in the first place, then we have to accept the idea that he's not making stuff just to completely obliterate and wipe out, to annihilate, but that he wants to rescue his creation, that he longs for us as his creatures. And so while there is this inherent distance between us and him, he's joined our ranks, and he has done it so that we can be with him forever as his creation, who are in full relationship with him. And so in Job 19, verses 23 through 27, Job says, "Oh, that my words were recorded, that they were written on a scroll, that they were inscribed with an iron tool on lead, or engraved in rock forever. I know that my Redeemer lives, and that in the end he will stand on the earth. And after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh I will see God. I myself will see him with my own eyes, I and not another. How my heart yearns within me." And so Job's hope wasn't in advancing to higher levels of consciousness on some ethereal plane, but to a renewal of a material universe, which is his home and from which he arose, and that God would join him in this material plane, that he would see God with his own physical eyes even after his skin had been destroyed. And as believers in a faithful creator, we share that same hope. As Paul writes in Romans 8:18 through 25, "I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to this present time. Not only so, we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies." And so what was existential despair now becomes expectant longing, joyful expectant longing for what we are confident is yet to come, because we were created by a faithful creator. We can look forward to what is yet to come. And he says, "For in this hope we were saved, but hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for it, for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently." And I would add that in that waiting, we are being transformed into his image, which is his desire. And so God entered his creation to reconcile it to himself and preserve it forever. That's lesson one in the anthropology section of theologies, lesson seven in theologies. Please refer to the study and gathering guide for more resources, and anything else you might need, reach out through the website or the Facebook page. Thanks a bunch.